Accession number 31693, reel 13.
Mr. Robson, reel 13. So, what were your first impressions of Hong Kong?
When we actually were flying in and seeing Kai Tak Airport sticking out in the sea, and we looked down and saw all these skyscrapers in Hong Kong, even then in the early 60s, and coming down quite steeply, and then landed on the Kai Tak Airport, because it's both civilian and military use, and seeing a squadron of aircraft actually parked up, and then getting off, and the first thing I noticed was the heat. Very, very hot. It was October, and after a 28-hour flight, it was all we wanted to do really was get our heads down, and the buses picked us up, and then driving through Hong Kong, even in those days, was helter-skelter. I mean, I've never seen so many people around in my life, going about the business, and the traffic. The traffic was tremendous. Fortunately, from Kai Tak Airport to Gun Club Barracks, wasn't that far. And as we drove through the streets from the airport, and then driving into Gun Club Barracks, I thought it was absolutely tremendous. The barracks has only been open a few years, and the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, of course, were in there in 1958. I don't know the battalion who we took over from. I can't remember who it was. But anyway, we drove into Gun Club Barracks, and every building was actually white, painted white. Absolutely superb. The second best barracks I'd ever been into, apart from Gun Club Barracks, which was the best. Sorry, Montgomery Barracks in Berlin, which was the best. Now, this one was close second. Modern facilities, absolutely beautiful. Beautiful barracks.
Can you describe the layout of the barracks?
Yes. When you came into the main gate, you had a slight incline. There was some, and just behind the guard room, there were the Murray quarters for the senior NCOs. As you came up the incline, you turned left, and on the right hand side, there was an administration block and the QMs. As you came round to the main part of the barracks, you looked over towards the football field, another barrack on the big barrack room, double, I think it was two or three floors, excuse me, two or three floors on the left hand side. And then there was another set of buildings on the left, and the main accommodation for the troops was actually round the main square on the right hand side. If you continued round, you went down a small bank. The officers' mess was on the left hand side, and then you came in a right, around in a wide arc and back to the main gate. But absolutely very not spread out over a whole big distance, very compact barracks. You could cover from one side to the other in less than 5 minutes. That's how compact it was, but absolutely superb.
And what was the actual accommodation like for yourselves?
The accommodation was very modern. Four-man rooms, which we were used to in Berlin. Parquet flooring. The showers. Showers, baths, toilets, all modern. But when we arrived there, they'd had a water shortage, and when we were briefed about it, the water only came on every 4 days. Fortunately for the troops, it wasn't too bad for the troops side, but certainly for the married quarters, they only got water for every 4 days. And we'd only been there about 6 weeks, October, November, around about November, December, when it's even then it was hot, and we had the first of the typhoons. Never experienced anything like it. High winds, and fortunately loads and loads of water, because it really did come down. And sometimes we used to go out and stand in, with our shorts on, underneath the overflow from the roofs, and get a quick shower while it rained. It was tremendous.
Did it do damage? I mean, I'm not thinking just the barracks, but the people's, civilian population around you?
Oh, yes. Because in Hong Kong itself, there were still the slum quarters, and people up on the hills, living in shanties, and especially if you got one typhoon after another, caused a lot of damage, and would be out doing damage control and damage repair, and rescuing the poor people who are living in these shanties.
And were you called out on that kind of duty?
Yeah, we went out. I used to do the radio side. Of course, we used to go out doing the radio communications. So yes, we did do that. We used to also, we were actually given, it may sound funny to people, but we used to do riot control in the old colonial style. And one of my areas of responsibility was to go to Kai Tak Airport and set up a communications system at Kai Tak Airport. And even in those days, when we went out, when the typhoons were on, I've been on top of Kai Tak Police building trying to put up a 27-foot mast in the wind. And I can remember one day putting this up, and there was three soldiers who were putting up this 27-foot mast on the building in the typhoon, in I would say about a force 3 typhoon, and we couldn't hold the mast. The mast came down, actually blew out of our hands, and we thought it was going to go over the top of the building onto the people and transport down below. Fortunately, it just hit the parapet, and the mast itself bent in a U shape, shall I say. And I had some explaining to do when we got back and told what had happened. But it was very, very difficult, as I say, trying to put it up on this building.
Were you ever told why you might have to be used in a riot situation? Were riots expected?
It was just... I suppose it was, because there must have been riots in Hong Kong. I know later, much, much later, the army was called out, but I think we'd left then when there was a run on the banks in Hong Kong. And no one must have been there, because I remember seeing a queue and looking at these people. Some were torn clothing on, queuing outside the banks to get the money out of the banks.
And that was a lively incident. I mean, were you involved in?
We were never called out. We were there in support of the police, which I must admit, the Hong Kong police. When I used to see them walking around in their KD uniforms, absolutely superbly smart, with armed, of course, the police, because they were still having trouble with them. Drug smugglers and the old Chinese gangs.
And were there areas out of bounds to you?
There was quite a number of areas were out of bounds. Two areas which I remember quite distinctly, it was the old Wall City in Hong Kong itself.
That's the island, is it?
On the island itself. Because we were actually on the mainland in Kowloon, because a lot of people don't realise that. In Hong Kong Island itself was separated by the straits, and to get to from one side to the other, from Kowloon to Hong Kong, you had to go on a ferry. The ferries themselves, I mean, they're well known throughout the world, and the Star Ferry, and they're still going to this day. Because I was in Hong Kong a few years ago on holiday, and the ferries were still running, but they had a modern underground system, absolutely superb, and it actually left London Underground in the shade.
It's tunnelled under the streets, is it?
Right under the strait, and absolutely superb. So that was one big change I saw when I went back to Hong Kong just before the Chinese takeover.
And you were saying that we'll deal with basically your response to the Hong Kong situation. I mean, this was you'd never think of, from England, Germany to Hong Kong, the enormous difference in life, culture and everything.
Absolutely tremendous. I mean, when I think, you know, I left home at 18 to join the army, went down to Honiton in Devon, first time abroad, over to Berlin, then coming back to the UK for 3 months, and then going out in the Far East to Hong Kong, which I'd only ever read about and heard about on the news. One of my big things when I was at school was geography anyway, and I loved, one of my best lessons was geography. And to actually go out to Hong Kong, there was nowhere in this world at that time. I think I was the first person in my family ever to go abroad, and then to write letters to my mother explaining everything that was there was fascinating, because I never went back to the UK after I got out to Hong Kong for 3 years.
What do you think of the Chinese themselves, the people as a whole?
The Chinese that I came into contact with were very, very friendly, loved the British, because we also had a unit of Chinese who were stationed with us, and they were local Hong Kong, and we treated them exactly the same as us. They would do the mundane duties within the barracks and act as interpreters. One of whom I became very friendly with, because he was on the boxing team with me, and he actually he was in the Hong Kong regiment, but he was a military policeman. Because we had a successful boxing team, this was later on in our tour in Hong Kong, he transferred to us to become one of our boxing team because we were so successful. But yes, the people of Hong Kong themselves, I mean, not just the Chinese, but a lot of white Russians were living in Hong Kong at that time. Australians, Americans, I mean, it's such diverse, a lot of people in Hong Kong. It was tremendous. And later on, when my wife joined us and my son, we lived in a place called Chungking Mansions, which is on Nathan Road, which is the main road which runs right through Kowloon. And we later moved into this Chungking building on the 14th floor of this tremendous building, and got to know the Chinese, Japanese who lived in it. It wasn't just British soldiers, because it was, although it wasn't, it's classed as a quarter, it was classed as a a living accommodation for troops and the families, and absolutely superb. And of course, you used to get the Americans coming in from Lee, from Vietnam, and we got to know those as well. A lot of friendly rivalry as normal with the Americans.
But about, how did you say about the great difference in poverty and wealth in the
that was the thing which surprised me. A lot of beggars on the street, and I mean, they used to maim some of their children, which I found very, very difficult. When you first go on there, yes, you give them money. But after a while, you become hardened to it, especially after finding out, you know, that sometimes maim the children. But a lot of these weren't actually born in Hong Kong themselves. They were refugees who came over the border, and the police were always rounding them up and sending them back to China. And we used to feel very, very sorry for them, but it was a way of life for them, and you had to harden yourself a little bit about it. But yes, I mean, it was difficult, but you became used to it. Not blasé, blasé is the wrong word, but you couldn't deal with it all the time. That's why other authorities are dealing with it.
What do you feel then, in general terms, was the response of the troops to the population?
The troops, yes, there was a little bit of bother, but it's wherever troops are, there'll always be a little bit of jealousy on both sides. Knowing the British soldiers, I do, after serving 17 years with them, people have got to also remember that sometimes all adrenaline after training all week, the adrenaline gets a bit going, and go out and let the hair down. Yes, they do drink a lot, but as people are seeing now, what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan, you can't come from a place and just switch off. It's impossible. And people let steam off. But the people, the actual attitude between the troops and the local Chinese was no problem whatsoever. A lot of the Chinese were very, very loyal to the British Crown, and they didn't want to be handed over to the Chinese. And I became friendly with one or two, and they would even then, and we kept saying, no, but it's a long time off, it's a long time off. But time passes very, very quickly. And when it did become time for them to be handed over, a lot of people were very frightened of what was going to happen to them when the Chinese took over. But having seen seen the program, which when the Chinese did take over, they're keeping it very, very separate from the rest of. They're keeping the same distance, so people can't just leave China and go into Hong Kong.
Was there any problems at any time with gangs, Chinese gangs?
Chinese gangs, yes, we had a little bit of trouble with them, and I remember one instance where. There was a big fight, or some married families were actually attacked, and squaddies being squaddies, they did get together, and they went out to the area where the families had been attacked by these gangs, and did actually take retribution, shall we say. And I can remember a couple of guys actually were sentenced to 3 months in prison in the local Chinese jail, which is not to be recommended because there's no special privileges. But yes, there was There were some gangs. Fortunately, there was no... nobody got killed through it, which was the pleasing part about it. But fortunately, I never saw that side. Some lads did, I didn't. Well, going back to the two places that I was telling you about, with the walled city within Hong Kong itself, and out in the new territories, there was a walled village. Again, that was out of bounds to all troops. Nobody was allowed in. I mean, even the police didn't go in there unless there was four or five of them to go into these areas. So it was very funny seeing that, because you'd be driving along the road in the new territories, and I can't remember the name of the village now, and there was a wall, and they were very, very insular, shall I say. And you never saw any of them out.
What about your leisure activities when your work had been done? Where did you find relaxation and enjoyment?
Again, right until the family came over, it was just going out and visiting the local bar. But there was a club called the China Free Club, which we used to go and visit, which was on Hong Kong side. And it's like a nappy anywhere, although it wasn't run for British troops, it was run by the Merchant Navy Club. And not far from the barracks, there was a little bar, it was a little club in actual fact, with a football field. And what used to happen is we used to go down there, and we were made welcome, and we had a guy called Vernon Dodds, who I still see now, and he used to run a football team for the people who used to go in there, and we used to have regular matches, football matches, against the fleet, and this is the Merchant Navy now, from different nationalities from all over the world, who used to come in, and we used to play football against them at a weekend. So that was quite good. But again, we'd lost a lot of the NASA servicemen at that time, and I then became a regular member of the first team squad of the battalion football team. So I was playing football as well in Hong Kong. We also had company teams who were in the local league, so not only for the battalion but also for the company in the local leagues against the Chinese and
Chinese
and other units. Yeah.
So you integrated pretty well.
I thought we did. I thought we did extremely well, to be perfectly honest. The people used to come round and watch the football match, and it was quite funny because our football pitch within the barracks was next to the external fence, and whenever we had a football match, we had a team, or we had all the Chinese lining the fence on the far side, which is just an ordinary wire fence, shouting for the team. That really was quite funny. And when I was saying that the battalion was in this camp, and as I said, it was quite a small camp, it couldn't take the whole battalion. One of the battalions was out in the new territory. One of the companies was out in the new territories. I'm trying to think of the name of it. Kinmel? I can't remember the name of the... which was only one company. And that was about 10 miles away. But out in the new territories was just one company. And also the, I think it was the mortars as well, because again space was restricted for mortar training and anti-tanks, so they were actually up in the new territories,
and that was there why they were there in effect too. And presumably the companies interchanged there.
No, as far as I can remember, I think the companies stayed up there permanent. I can't remember them interchanging. I may be wrong. But certainly for the mortars and the anti-tanks, and especially the anti-tanks, there's no way the barracks was big enough for them to come back into Gunclun barracks.
Can we go back to Les Tanks for the moment? Prices and that. How did your money go? You had plenty of money?
I'm trying to think how many.
There'd be no overseas allowance, presumably.
Yes, and it was quite generous. I can't remember how much we were getting at that time, but we did live life. In Hong Kong, there I became quite friendly with one of the local police, who was European in from London, and he explained to me there was five prices in Hong Kong. One for the police, one for local Chinese, one for the British troops, one for people visiting, and the highest price was for the Americans. And of which I thought, unusual. I've actually been in a shop, and this American came in and went to the owner, went to buy something anyway, and I noticed that it was $5, but it wasn't, it's not marked five Hong Kong dollars, it's just marked $5 with a dollar sign. And this American came in and said, "Oh, $5 and Chinese proprietor said yes. So thereby the American gave him $5 US without a blink of an eye, and the Chinese never gave him any change. They just accepted it. I thought when the Americans did come in, they were a bit naive. I mean, they would never barter, because that's what you had to do as well. If you went in, all right, foodstuffs you didn't barter for, but clothes and everything else, you bartered. If you saw a sign, $10, you would offer $5. And invariably, you would get it for $7. And they were, and you were happy, and so were they. That I found very strange and hard. Even now, I found it, when I go away anywhere, I find it strange to barter. Because to me, you know, people have got to live.
And of course, was the envy when the Americans in, because they were splashing this money around? And
no, we just used to laugh at them. Yes, they did used to splash it around, but we used to laugh at them because I shall admit that the royal Chinese used to. I mean, the businessmen, and they are tremendous businessmen. That's why some of the richest people in the world are the Chinese, and when you see them in action, they were absolutely brilliant. The Americans used to get their eyes taken out in Hong Kong, but hey, you know, if they are naive to flash their cash about,
were they coming down from Vietnam on leave and this kind
they
of
were thing? Indeed. And that one of the saddest, and we got to know Americans. They are a friendly lot, and they do wear their heart on their sleeve. And we got to know them. Especially when they were coming down from Vietnam, we used to get to know them quite. They used to come and visit the same bars as us, and we used to drink with them. And of course, seeing what they were going through in Vietnam, at that time they were only advisors, and only later on became that when a lot of Americans went into Vietnam. However, I got to know them quite regular guys, and one of the saddest sights I can remember was one of their transport planes taking them back to Vietnam after they'd had their R&R, actually coming off the runway at Kai Tak Airport through a tyre exploding and veering off the side and actually going down into the sea, and not many people survived that crash. There was still bringing bodies up 4 and 5 days later, still in the seas, and I thought, what a tragic way to go.